This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Okay, Brian, here we go. First major of the year. How jacked do you get for the first major every year?
It's the best week in golf. I love it. I can't wait. It usually coincides with golf season starting here in Western New York, although this year we haven't gotten much luck with weather, Sal. Normally by now, usually I've at least played a few times, or at least I think we've all tried to. This year's been really rough with the winter, and it feels relentless. The Masters here will give some good mojo to everybody here in Western New York, and we'll get good golf weather here soon to play. But yeah, this is the best. I mean, you start seeing the promos like literally during the NFL playoffs. Like if you're watching Bills playoff games on CBS, like they're playing Masters promos in January. So it's months and months of buildup, and yeah, I'm ready to go for sure.
Nance is still doing that, right? He's kind of tapered off on some other things.
Yeah, he cut back on the NCAA tournament, but still doing golf. He actually said, this week he was asked about it. His goal is to at least announce the Masters. He said it might be earlier for the NFL, but he said he's at least hoping to do the Masters till 2036.
Really?
That'll give him 51 years of being at the Masters, but it'll be the 100th Masters. So that's what he's hoping to get to 2036. He said his goal. Now he said he might not stop there, but he said he wants to be there for the 100th Masters.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And they do it so right. And it's been on there for a long time, obviously, on CBS as well. Yeah, and our buddy Andrew Catalan is a big part of the broadcast now.
Yeah, and there are a couple of changes. Catalan has gotten a bigger role. Mm-hmm. I think he kind of does, I think, maybe like hole 14 now. They don't have as much on-course reporters and media at the Masters. If anybody's ever gone, it's like the cleanest looking tournament out of the course. They don't have traveling media. If you went to Oak Hill, the big groups, you probably have 40 media members walking with the group all along the rope with their cameras and, you know, all the international media. They don't have that at the Masters. Nobody's out on the course at all. They want it to just be the course, and that's it. They do have the tower where one of the CBS announcers would be for each hole. And of course, also you mentioned Andrew Catalan going in, but having a role, but Vern Lundquist for the first time in forever. I mean, I don't know exactly how many years he won't be on the famous 16th on the par three, where he's been for a long, long time. And, Lundquist has one of the most memorable broadcasting calls ever in Masters history with Jack Nicklaus in 86, where he's got that putt on 17. He's like, maybe, yes, sir. And it goes in and, you know, everybody goes bonk. And that was kind of the clincher there for Nicklaus. But yeah, no Vern Lundquist this year. Frank Nobolo, got the nice British accent going, is taking Lundquist's spot on the third, on 16 on that famous par three.
And I say our buddy Andrew Catalan, because in case people don't realize, he is the play-by-play man for Bills preseason games.
That's right.
Works with Steve Tasker. So he'll be on the call on the Masters. All right. So Scottie Scheffler, chances of him repeating and winning his third in 4 years.
You still would have to say very good. I mean, he's still world number one. He's still dominating every time he goes out there, but not coming in as good to the Masters as he did last year. Last year at this point, he had come off of winning two of his last three events, including the Players' Championship. This year, he still doesn't have a win in 2025. He's been playing well. He finished fifth at Pebble Beach. He finished sixth at Phoenix, seventh at the Genesis, and 10th at the Arnold Palmer. So, I mean, four top 10s in the legit events, and then he finished 11th at the Players' Championship. So, I mean, there's five top 10s right there, all at big events with elevated fields, but he doesn't have the wins that he does coming into last year. And he's just been a little, sloppier, definition for him being sloppy with his game compared to ours is not even close, but he's just been a little off here and there, and his putting definitely isn't as good as it needs to be. I loved, there's a stat that I saw this week on Golf Channel as they were previewing the event sale. It's called bounce back ranking. Essentially, it's what they deem to be a shot that is not essentially hitting a fairway or hitting a green. Like, what's your next shot? Do you get it back? If you miss the fairway, do you then get back on the green, like back in regulation? Or, if you miss the green, are you able to get up and down? So it's like this, they call it a bounce back ranking, which I think is kind of cool. Like, are you able to overcome the adversity, or are you able to recover after a bad shot? The last two seasons going into the Masters, Scheffler was second and second in the world. This year he's 84th. So he's not recovering as well from when he gets into trouble as maybe he has been in years past. So he's not in his best form, but for sure it's very easy to argue that he could win his third Masters in four tries here, because he's so good. And if he just putts even average, the rest of his stats, tee to green, are always right at the top. So if he putts well, there's no reason why he can't win again.
Would you argue the opposite for Rory McIlroy? A fifth place finish at the Houston Open. And of course, he wins the Players' Championship. He also has a win earlier at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am as well. Just this whole season seems like a couple of, not top 10 finishes, but is he playing some really good golf right now? Is that indication of that?
I think he's playing the best of any player on tour, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the two wins that you mentioned, that's an elevated event this year at Pebble Beach, a very strong field. The Players' Championship's the biggest event of the season up until this week. And he was able to win that in a playoff on a Monday, if you remember, over J.J. Spaun. Mm-hmm. So, I think he's playing as good as anybody. We know that the Masters week for him can be a stressful one, because every year he comes in, he's reminded this is the last major that you need to complete the career Grand Slam. And if you win the career Grand Slam, like, you elevate yourself into an elite category of golfers that are, you can count on one hand of how good you are to be in that group. And he also hasn't won a major in a long time. I mean, last year he was tremendous in majors, but if you remember, maybe the most painful one of all was at the U.S. Open. He's battling at Pinehurst with Bryson DeChambeau, and he misses those two short putts, one on 16, one 18s, ones that us amateurs would say, how does he miss that? It's so close. Yeah. And then DeChambeau, that incredible up and down from like 50 yards out on the last hole from the bunker, to end up winning it by one over McIlroy. And remember, Rory kind of stormed off, didn't talk to the media, got in the car, left right away. Really, really discouraged about that. I mean, that was maybe his tournament to be taken there too, to kind of snap this major skid. So yes, it's been a long time, over a decade since Rory has won, 2014 last major. So it's been a while for him. The one thing about others that have had majors droughts is like, they've gone away. Like, Spieth has had droughts. He's gone away. Justin Thomas has had some droughts here and there, gone. McIlroy, at least through this decade of him not winning a major, he's still relevant every year. He still wins. He still wins a lot. He hasn't really dropped even out of the top three in the world. So he's still playing outstanding golf. But this is the one that, of course, he wants to win more than any, not only to snap the major's skid, but to get his career Grand Slam. And, when he drives the ball, he's the best driver of the golf ball in the world. There isn't the penalizing rough that there is at the other majors. So this is even a spot where he can crank it up. And even if he misses it a little, there's opportunity to kind of get around. So I'm curious to see what he does. He's made a little change this year, which I think's really helped Sal. They said he's hitting, I guess, to make it as easy as possible for listeners here, less shots at 100%. He's trying to hit more controlled shots, maybe more three-quarter shots, flight the ball in lower. And that's really a key to playing well at Augusta National. You have to know where to hit it on the green and where not to hit it on the green, or where you cannot miss and where you can miss when you're hitting approach shots. It's a second shot course quite a bit, people like to say. Like, who's the best from after the drive into the green? Like, that's usually the guy that ends up doing well. So I think McIlroy's feeling about as good as he has coming in to this event with that kind of style and approach.
Brian Koziel joining me here on the West Her Hotline. Seems like it was forever ago that we were embroiled in this Bryson DeChambeau, you know, stuff that was going on and following him around every tournament. That's kind of calmed down, and kind of so has his game a little bit. He actually, and I think personality wise, he's kind of grown on a lot of people, right? I mean, he's doing a lot of the YouTube stuff, and it seems like he's just now being respected as a golfer. Now, he has a few top 10 finishes on the LIV Tour this year, but how about Bryson DeChambeau's game and where that is right now?
Yeah, he was asked about that this week, about just his like public persona, yeah, and like what, how it's changed and like what happened. And he said, you know, admittingly this week, just 2 days ago in his press conference, he said, look, you know, I was all thinking I had to do things a certain way, and I realized it rubbed people the wrong way. And he goes, I look back at it and wish I would have handled things differently, whether it was interacting with fans, interacting with media, or even interacting with other players. I mean, remember he had that feud with Brooks Koepka, yes, there for a little while too. That was,
yes,
both of them were ridiculous with it. Some drama that he didn't need. He says a big part now of him doing all that content creating that he's doing on his YouTube page that has been very, very popular is that he realizes now, he's like, it took me a few years to figure it out, but he goes, the outreach that I have and the ability for me to grow the game and the influence that I can have on young kids to watch and be excited about golf. And he says, of course, every tournament I'm in, I'm going to do everything I can to win. I still want to win just as much as I ever have. But he said, now I want to be more appreciative of the moments that I'm in, and I'm still going to do everything I have to try to win and study and practice and do all the crazy scientific stuff that he does. But he said, it's made me more content to be out on the golf course in these tournaments in terms of realizing like, hey, this is the spot I've worked all my life for here. I'm really happy to be here. And he definitely, as much as any golfer that I've seen, has gone from a villain to, it was like the mad scientist to the villain to now is almost kind of like a lovable Bryson, to the point that people might not like him because he's on LIV, but in terms of just how he's carried himself and what he's doing to the general public to try to grow the game of golf, I commend him for turning things around.
Yeah, that's really great to hear, by the way. And it does, it kind of speaks to, I think, you and I, who are both have been educators, and you are now, and you're an educator, and you're a teacher, that I think at some point you grow up and you realize, now when I say grow up, I don't mean from immaturity necessarily, but I think that you realize that you have a bigger impact and bigger purpose, right? And it feels like that's what he's saying through golf. He has a bigger purpose to hand it down the right way and to talk and to have this influence. And I love that. I love when, I think all of us, maybe you could speak, I know I went through that in my life and say, you know, you have this platform and I know you give a lot back of your personal time and your resources to do things for, you know, for kids as a coach, but even through charitable organizations, little things like that, when you realize the impact you can have because of the platform you have.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, Sal. And I think, you know, you and I in our jobs in our different ways, whether it's when we work with high school students or when you've coached before, you know how meaningful it is to coach a high school student and they reach a certain goal or they learn something that maybe you've been working on, they've been struggling with, like how good it makes you feel as a coach or their teacher or their supporter to do that. So I get it. And then, you know, even now, you know, in your media role, Sal, I know it's the same thing. Like if there's something that you can do for somebody to like enhance the experience or to make it a memorable day for them, I know you're very good at that. It's something that I always say when people say, hey, you know, do you know Sal Capaccio? And I always speak very highly of you, Sal, that you always try to make experiences for everybody when they interact with you in the setting of sports and media, like that you make it great for them. And that's something that I always try to do as well, is that realizing that, hey, for some people, you know, going on the radio for 30 seconds for them, like that could be the highlight of their week, or getting a chance to meet somebody on the Bills or on the Sabres, or have a selfie with somebody, or get a chance to interact with a fellow media member or a broadcaster, or get an, like if I could help make that happen in any way, it is super meaningful. And DeChambeau has that platform times a billion, yeah, than what I have with his opportunity to grow golf around the world. So it is cool that he's doing that. And it makes him a person that I want to root for more, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Brian, over the last, since 2001, I was looking at the stats, dominated mostly by American winners from the United States, 15 of them since 2001, but there have been others from other countries. Trevor Immelman from South Africa, Angel Cabrera from Argentina, Schwartzel from South Africa. Remember that one? Adam Scott from Australia. That was a big one. Remember from 2013, I believe it was, here it says Sergio and John Rahm, both from Spain. Anyway, it's a long winded way of me asking, you know, what the challenge is of non-Americans to win at Augusta.
Good question. Yeah. I mean, this isn't a course that maybe is similar to what you might see elsewhere around the world. So in that sense, it's not like players are used to saying, well, this style of course preps me well for Augusta National across the globe. Yeah. You know, internationally here, you know, again, I think we go back to McIlroy. He clearly has the best chance. If there's going to be an international winner, it's going to be for him. John Rahm, talent-wise, is capable of it. I'm not quite sure where John's Rahm head is at with his golf game. I think he has regrets of joining LIV. I don't know if he'll ever openly, publicly admit that. I just think some of the things he said about what he has missed about being on the PGA Tour and playing the best players in the world. Like, Rahm is such a fiery competitor. I was really stunned by him. I got Dustin Johnson. I got good Brooks Koepka. I even got DeChambeau at the time. I didn't quite get John Rahm moving. Even all the older players, the Mickelsons and the Poulters and the Westwoods of the world, because their career was ending. But John Rahm was literally the guy. I mean, number one, him and Scheffler and McIlroy, they're battling each week. He's at the peak of his career. And to jump just to get the bigger check when, to me, he could have been, you know, like right in the mix of how we're talking about Scheffler and McIlroy right now. Like, that part I was a little surprised with. And he, again, I mean, think about it. Like, we talk about John Rahm maybe a couple times a year. That's it right now, where he is such a historian of the game. He has said so much how he values playing in these tournaments that have meaning. I'm not quite sure if he's ready to just all of a sudden jump in and turn it on when he's playing these events that he says, you know, are tough to feel, kind of like what they're all about, because there is no tradition. We don't know what these live events are. If somebody wins a live event in a certain country, like, okay, like, what does that do? Like, I don't know. Is that viewed to be a great accomplishment? I don't know. We haven't quite figured that out yet. So for Rahm, I think, you know, him being in the mix in a tournament like this, he's got to feel like, hey, these are his only chances to do so. And he's super talented. So, I mean, you know, internationally wise, you got to figure he's a factor. Matsuyama always plays well at the Masters. That would be another name that I would throw out.
He did win in 2021.
And, that's, you know, right.
Matsuyama and Rahm are the only non-Americans to win since 2018. It's been pretty much dominated. But two out of the last 4 years, right? You got Rahm, you got Matsuyama. In between that, Scottie Scheffler both times.
Yeah. So, and probably, you know, who else could you throw in that mix? I mean, Ludvig Åberg is a young player last year that we saw finish second in his Masters debut. Super impressive. He's been a little hot and cold this year on the PGA Tour, but there's another European name that that could pop up here as we go into this tournament.
Any changes to the course this year that we should know about in any regard?
The only thing I would say that people might notice is visually there are less trees in between holes. And a lot of that was due to the hurricane that came through. And I know there were kind of two of them within a 2 week span in September that came through and it wrecked some havoc. Obviously Augusta National's got the most, you know, biggest golf budget in the world. So they clean up quick and they fix everything up quick, but there are less trees out there in between holes. So I don't know on TV if it'll be noticeable enough, but I know I've heard players say that they're noticing it as they're walking down fairways. In terms of the length of holes, there was one or two holes that maybe have added just a little to the tee box, but nothing significant like there has been in previous years. Like on 13, the famous par 5 of Amen Corner, they added a new tee box there last year. That was brand new, but nothing major in terms of like the yardage or overall look.
One other specific guy I want to ask you about: what has happened to Jordan Spieth? I'm looking at his odds right now. He's down. He's at 50-1. He's pretty far down there. Actually, 40-1. I'm sorry, 40-1. But there's a lot of people ahead of him. Now, granted, he's still probably 25th, maybe on the.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
A list, let's say, but what's happened to Jordan Spieth?
Super, super inconsistent player. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as you know, as the best short game still, maybe on the PGA Tour. He's been in contention to win this year. He's got four top tens. And he was fifth at Pebble Beach, sixth at Phoenix, seventh at the Genesis, nine in West Palm. So he's had opportunities to win. He's played pretty well. But he's a guy, when you think about the Masters, that the course fits up really well. You have to have an incredible short game. You have to be able to get up and down and have imagination around the greens. And he's as good as anybody at doing it. This tournament, he has played better in than maybe some of his others over his recent years here when he's still been struggling. Because, again, he is definitely inconsistent off the tee. But you can get away with it a little bit more at the Masters if you're spraying off the tee than you can at the other majors. I mean, I'll be honest, I was probably on the radio a decade ago after Spieth won in 2015 saying, hey, this is the guy that can push to be the next Tiger because his short game was so good. I thought his mental game was so strong. And then he came back the next year and was dominating and was on his way to winning a second one. And I thought maybe here comes the next great one. And if he had that collapse on the back nine on the 12th hole, and that's when Danny Willett snuck in and ended up winning his Masters that year. And yeah, I mean, Spieth's been obviously good here and there throughout, but very inconsistent over the last couple of years, even to the point, you know, last year where he had trouble even getting himself into the playoffs. And, you know, he's not even a regular now for thinking about Ryder Cup and stuff like that. He's got a lot of work to do if he wants to get himself in that back in that top 10, top 12 range to be an automatic for a Ryder Cup or be an automatic for even our discussion here about thinking about who could win. If there is a major that you said I have to pick Spieth for, this would be the one, though, because he is very good at this tournament and his short game is suitable to get himself in contention here.
Anybody that you like, maybe from, you know, the back of the field, let's say, I'm not saying like way in the back of the field, but somebody who's not getting all the love necessarily, who say, you know what, don't be surprised if this guy kind of has a good showing over the week.
Yeah, I'll throw the name Corey Connors out, which our Canadian listeners, I think, would
there
know
an international guy.
Sure.
There you go.
Yeah, he has had a really, really good season this year. He's been in contention in majors the last couple of seasons to maybe break through and get his. His one failure at times can be his putting, but he's been really, really good accuracy wise. So I think if this week he can stay and have that accuracy, maybe he won't have to rely as much on being outstanding putting wise at this tournament. But I've liked Connors a little bit this year. I'm really intrigued about what Will Zalatoris can do. This is a guy with a ton of talent. I feel like can win in any week, but he's had to overcome injuries these last few years. He says now he's finally healthy. This is kind of his biggest stage since. So that's another player. And a name that obviously maybe people would recognize because he's going to be the Ryder Cup captain this year, but Keegan Bradley's had a good year playing. He said he's not going to pick himself as a captain pick, even if he's been playing great, but he might get him. If he gets a win in a major at some point here too, he could put himself into the top six where he would automatically make it. And he could be a captain and a player at the same time, which would be pretty wild. That hasn't happened since essentially, back in the 60s and the 70s when they had player captains for the Ryder Cup. So there are some names there. You know, I guess if you really, really want to go far down here, Denny McCarthy, a Porter Cup champion from Niagara Falls Country Club, known to be the best putter on tour. So maybe if the greens get really, really crusty and fast and it comes down to a putting contest, maybe McCarthy gives himself an opportunity to get in the mix this week.
And then it's going to be another month. Quail Hollow, I'm looking at. Is that where the PGA Championship is this year?
Yep. Right. So that'll be a month away. And, you know, the PGA of America has been really happy with their move to May.
Yeah.
One thing negative from that is that because of the fact that the PGA is in May, they may be trending towards avoiding the Northeast courses.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I know for everybody that enjoyed Oak Hill 2 years ago, Oak Hill had it in 2003 and in 2013 and in 2023. And, you know, the announcements of what's to happen with 2033, they're still waiting. There's still a few open PGA Championship slots kind of in the mid 2030s area there. I think Oak Hill supports the event, and Western New York supports the event as good as any, just from all the other majors that I've been at across the country. I think that, you know, Rochester itself, if you just look corporate-wise, sponsor-wise, they do as good as they possibly can. But a lot of these times it's about making these events bigger with VIP and corporate and all these sort of things that, you know, let's face it, there are other cities, there's maybe untapped resources in that area that they can make it bigger and better, because ultimately, as we all know, unfortunately, there's a huge piece of sports that is the bottom line. And if they can maybe get themselves in a course that where they've got a whole bunch of areas where they can build things out and create a better fan experience for corporate sponsors and things like that, I can't think that it's solely the weather that's holding the PGA of America back for maybe announcing the return to Oak Hill. Usually, right before the week of the PGA Championship, they usually announce one or two future sites. So maybe in mid-May we'll find out, but cross your fingers. I think Oak Hill deserves it. The course itself, clearly with the history that it has, deserved to have another major championship coming soon.
And then you have the U.S. Open this year, and that is in Texas, I believe, right? Let me look up Oakmont, right?
It's actually close. It's in Pittsburgh, Oakmont.
Oh, what am I looking at then? U.S. Open, maybe I looked at, okay, sorry. Oakmont Country Club. Why am I looking at Oakmont here? I don't know why that came up on it for me, but go ahead.
Yeah, so that's in Pittsburgh. Yeah. So yeah. For those that went to Oak Hill, if you want to drive to a major this year, Pittsburgh's not too far. What, 3 hours and change to get to Pittsburgh?
I thought so too. You know what it is? There's another Oakmont, I think, that came up in Texas, and that's why that happened. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there could be. That's a popular name for a course. Yeah. So that's happening this year in Pittsburgh. And that is known as one of the hardest golf courses in the world. And I went there twice, 2017. That was the year Dustin Johnson won it. I think it's 17, maybe 16. Don't quote me on the year. And then back in 2008, I think, when Angel Cabrera beat out Tiger Woods. Cabrera, by the way, who spent time in jail these last few years, is actually going to be playing back at the Masters this week. Remember, if you won a Masters, you're invited for life. They still extended the invitation to him. But if for those that want to make plans, if you want to go to a tournament this year and you want to go to a major, Pittsburgh's a nice road trip to do. And that's in the middle of June for the U.S. Open for the third major of the year.
By the way, I knew that. And I'm like, why is it telling me this? But truly, Oakmont, it says Corinth, Texas. There's an Oakmont. I'm like, oh, maybe I was wrong. And maybe it's Pittsburgh next year. But there you go. Thank you for correcting me and letting everybody know it's in Pittsburgh. Real quick, before I let you go, Brian Colziel here on the Western Hotline. What year was the first year you did Sabres pre and post game on WGR? Do you remember?
Yes.
As the main person?
It was 2007-08 season. It was yes. So they out of the lockout was the 04-05, and then 05-06 they went to, was the Carolina series, and then 06-07 that was the Ottawa one, and then I took over the year after that. So you can blame me maybe for what.
No, but you've been there for playoffs. You've been there for playoffs. But I am asking you because they are eliminated again.
Yep.
But they have won 8 of 9. Does it feel any different than years past when they've been in this position to you at all?
A little, because it feels like something that has always been a trouble for this team, which is personable accountability and the understanding to play discipline. They seemingly have figured it out. I think that while 2 years ago when they were a point away, they played that fun brand of hockey, there was still a lot of questions of like, hey, could this actually, if they made the playoffs, could they actually play in this style? And people always say no, because of course it tightens up, it toughens up. I think that the Sabres have shown that they can play that brand and they could play a little bit more discipline. And I think they also have shown that they can beat the best team. So it's working against the best teams. They beat, you know, over this last month of good play, they've beaten Washington, they've beaten Winnipeg, they've beaten Dallas, they've beaten Vegas, they've beaten Edmonton, they've beaten Florida, they've beaten the best teams. Overall in the entire NHL. So it shows that it's not just a fluke necessarily against the bad teams. They've been doing against the good teams. But Kyle Loposo was asked about this 2 years ago when they were playing well, about carrying momentum over to next season. And he said, that's nothing. He goes, look, there's new coaches, there's new players. He said, it's all brand new. Everybody has the fresh start. He said, almost never are you sitting there during preseason and getting ready for opening night. Are you ever thinking about what you did the previous March and April? So what can be useful maybe is that they are learning at least what it takes to win, and they're seeing results. So now they just have to remind themselves come next September and October, like, hey, this is what we have to do if we're going to win. The negative for the Sabres to me going into this offseason is that I think they went backwards with goaltender.
Yeah.
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, we thought maybe was the guy. And the Sabres still, since Ryan Miller, are still really searching for the guy. It shows if they get quality goaltending that that also can be a recipe for them winning. James Reimer has played outstanding here. I'm not making a case for James Reimer for next year, but I'm making a case that goaltending matters in the league. And maybe it's time that Devon Levi, you know, makes that next splash. A couple of times early in his tenure with this organization, he's had a chance to take the job, and it hasn't really gone his way. And then ultimately back to Rochester, which is probably the best spot for him. Him getting a long run in the playoffs this year would be great for him and his development to go out and try to go win a Calder Cup and see if they can take Rochester really far in the playoffs. But I got to believe if Kevin Adams is back and Lindy Ruff is back, which I believe they will be, they're going to give Devon Levi the shot to be the number one. Where James Reimer fits into the mix, if he wants to come back, that'll be interesting. Is Luukkonen tradable? I don't know. Would you want to even give up on Luukkonen? He had one really good year and one really year. So, like, that to me is the part that's tough, is that that's a key spot that I feel like is valuable, that they don't really have a firm answer on going into next year.
Brian, thanks as always, buddy. Enjoy Masters weekend and the 2025 golf season basically starting this weekend, buddy.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And if I get 2 cents here, we got 2 hour tee to green Saturday.
Yes.
So double the time. Looking forward to it. 7 to 9 Saturday morning. Kevin Sylvester, Jeff Mitas, myself, will be at Pendleton Creek Golf Club for 2 hours. So almost all on the Masters. So hope everybody can tune in on WGR.